Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter, and today I am speaking with Boris Kamstra. He's the CEO of Alphamin Resources Corp. Stock symbol is AFM on the Canadian exchange, and over-the-counter the stock symbol is AFMJF. Boris, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jack. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes. So, Boris, why don't we start off by getting an overview of Alphamin's tin project, and maybe we can bring us up to date on the latest developments and how you're moving towards production.
Alphamin's developing a tin project in the DRC. It's in a sector of the DRC called North Kivu. It is a tin project where geologically it's just one of those outliers. If in the world today, if you have a tin project that has a resource grade of about 1% tin, that would be considered a stellar project. We have a resource grade of about 4.5% tin. So we aren't percentages better than the going accepted norm. We are multiples better. We are in a tricky part of the world. One can make no bones about that, but not necessarily for the reasons people immediately associate with our neighborhood. Our greatest concerns are certainly not security. I live in Johannesburg, and I have infinitely more security at my home to sleep comfortably at night in Johannesburg than I do when I'm at Basir, where I sleep in a tent and I leave the door open to get a bit of breeze, and I enjoy the sounds of the jungle at night. So our major problems out there are primarily around logistics, about keeping the mine in supply and bringing components in. We're making good headway in that we have completed building the mine. We're in the process of commissioning it. And we had to move over 750 trucks from the port of Mombasa in Kenya all the way to site. And we were able to do that within the time constraints we'd allowed for ourselves. So we will be coming into production in the second half of this year. We will commission our plant, get all the wheels turning and get some material fed through at the end of this month. And we will slowly start ramping up the feed rate to take us to our nameplate capacity.
Okay, so for investors that may not be familiar with the story, I mean, it seems like you have a quite a large project. So can you kind of give us an overview of the size of the project and what kind of production you expect to produce there over the coming months and years?
Sure. Ironically, the size of the project is the smallest we could get away with. The deposit that we are mining, we call Mpama North, and it is by no means alone on our license area. We have significant targets, one immediately to our south, about 1,000 meters away, and our whole host a little further down the ridge. Normally, one would cover the area in drill rigs and get an absolute precise view of what you have underneath there and design everything accordingly. Given where we were and the difficulties in mobilizing rigs to the region, and also our perceived ceiling on the quantum of capital we would be able to attract to get invested in the area, we had to start with we, in essence, reverse engineered $200 million and said, what can we do for this? Drilling, building the plant and everything. So we've drilled out a resource. We have 230,000 tons contained tin in our resource. A really, really good project in the world today would have 100,000 tons. And the only reason that we don't have any more is that we stopped drilling. We then have spent $175 million building a mine. It's an underground mine and a processing plant, which will produce a tin concentrate plus 60% contained tin. We will produce just under 10,000 tons of contained tin per annum. And at present, we have a life of mine of 12 and a half years. Now, what we've built is just a hammer and chisel. It is a tool with which we will sculpt out a tin province that is far bigger than our current mine. So our current mine really is a proof of concept. It will produce very, very good returns. In fact, they're probably some of the best returns I've ever seen in any mining project I've ever evaluated. And with that cash, we will be able to pay down our debt. We will be able to offer our shareholders a dividend return should it be required. And we will be able to drill out additional resources and get a better sense of the tin province that we find ourselves in.
So let's kind of recap here. So you right now, you expect to start producing about 10,000 tons of tin per year from the current mine, starting this year, the coming months ahead. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Let's kind of go into the economics. Like, what are your production costs, and what do you expect to sell it for?
We'll be selling it for the LME price, less a marketing fee, and then some smelting fees. So we probably get a payability of about 93%, and tin is, when I last looked, was trading at $21,300 a ton. In terms of the economics of per unit produced, we're updating our 43-101 in that we changed our mining method and we'll need to revise our costs based on that. However, if it costs you $100 to mine a ton of rock, for any other miner, that ton of rock would give them 10 kilos of tin. In ours, it gives us 45 kilos of tin. So we have a lowest quartile cost structure. I can't give you exact numbers to date, but because you are bringing out so many tin units per ton of rock you bring out of the mine, it dilutes your total cost of tons of tin produced.
So you're saying that your mine is going to be what, in the lowest 25%, lowest quartile of tin miners worldwide?
Yes.
So you'll have some competitive economics there. And what? So 10,000 tons, and you're saying that you expect to scale up from there once you explore the surrounding area?
Absolutely. The intent is, my intent is to ultimately position us to be able to produce around 30,000 tons per annum. I suspect we would be able to produce more, but the tin market is relatively sensitive to new volumes coming online and very sensitive to volumes being taken offline. So there's a delicate balance one has to maintain there, and you have to ensure that you are optimizing the economics for the company, which may mean not necessarily putting your foot flat on the gas and producing every ton that you can.
Okay, but given the current production you expect, so 10,000 tons, and the market rate now is roughly what, 21,000 a ton?
Yeah, 21,300.
So what, that's a couple of hundred million. That's what is it, about 200 million in revenues?
Yes.
Is that okay? I'm just kind of ballparking it here. So 200 million. And the production, so what kind of EBITDA do you expect?
it will most certainly be a very healthy EBITDA. Unfortunately, due to the stock market constraints, I cannot give you a number now without having priced a 43-101 document.
Okay, so it'll be healthy. Okay, so let's talk about the kind of the tin market. Like what maybe people are not familiar with it. But what are the key uses of tin these days, and what is the demand picture going forward?
So the tin is the glue that holds the tech world together. The phone in your hand, the computer on your desk, increasingly the car you drive, all have tin that is holding the various components to either circuit board or to one another. And this came about in about 2006 when the technology sector started increasing in terms of produced volume in number of units. And the material that holds everything together is solder, and solder used to be made from lead. Now, lead obviously is not a very friendly element to be working with, particularly where you're heating it up and producing fumes, and then again disposing it of landfills. So the tech world looked around to find something that could replace lead in electronic solder, and tin was the ideal match. It is inert. It has a low cost, a low melting point, and wasn't too expensive. Obviously, this change drove the tin price up. And tin has been known and been mined by man since the Bronze Age. So all the low-hanging fruit, the easily accessible high-grade mines, have been mined out. The Romans had big tin mines all over Europe, and our mine would not exist if it were not for where it is located. It has been protected by its, where it finds itself. So going forward, the demand for tin is expected to remain healthy, and there is anticipated that there will be a supply-demand gap building up as the older tin mines start reducing their production due to either declining grades or to having mined out their ore bodies. There are very few new tin mines coming online, and of those, very few have scale and substance. So we believe that we're quite nicely positioned in a sector of the global economy that has a very sound footing, is expected to increase going forward, particularly when electronic vehicles take off and the more research that is done in tin, the more uses are being found for it in the whole battery, electronic vehicle, and solar power generation field. So nice commodity, terrific mine with legs, and very low cost of production.
And how much of tin is used in the electronics technology sector? What percentage of it goes to that versus tin cans and roofs?
Okay, very, very little goes to tin cans and roofs. Probably 50% goes to electronic solders. The total tin consumption runs between 350 and 400,000 tons per annum. A component of that is recycled tin, and that's about 30,000 tons, maybe 40,000 tons. So the bulk of it is going into electronic solders. A large component goes into tin chemicals. It is a stabilizer for plastics, particularly PVC stabilizer. It also is used to a very small degree in lining tin plate on some steel, but the bulk of it is all going into the electronic sector.
Okay, so in this mine, what's the projected life of the mine?
At the moment, it is 12 and a half years, but that has been constrained by us terminating a drilling program. Normally, you will only stop drilling once you are pretty convinced that you have accessed and documented the bulk of the resource available to you. We know that just at the location that we are mining, we stopped drilling when we got about 550 meters down, and some of our last drill intersects were the best drill intersects that we had received. In fact, when the geologists gave me a call very excited about one of them, I told them to go and double check their results because I didn't believe them. They were so good. So I'm fairly convinced that at least for the next 60, maybe 100 years, we'll be mining tin out of this region.
Okay. And now you said the project, I think you mentioned there was $175 million
yes.
invested so far in the
yes.
developing the project. Well, can you just give us just like a quick snapshot of the history of the project?
The project actually has a very interesting history. It was the site of quite a large artisanal rush in the early 2000s. And because it was isolated in the middle of a forest and not accessible other than by foot, much of what went on or was able to go on there was not visible to the outside world. When the outside world eventually got wind of what was going on there, our site was one of the key motivators for conflict minerals to be included in the Dodd-Frank Act. So tin was mined there. It produced about 4% of the world's tin through artisanal means. Artisanal mining always has a very short shelf life in that an artisanal miner needs the highest grade possible and generally needs it to be very close to the surface. Initially, the mining at Basir was on a scree slope, and then when that was exhausted, they had to start tunneling down. And some of those tunnels are absolutely terrifying. They 50 meters into the mountain, I will not fit in one of them, and no light, no ventilation, no support, no pumps. Water became an issue. Collapses became an issue. And eventually the production kind of went away. During that time, Elfman did have a license over the area, but was unable to exercise its rights. And eventually President Kabila formed a ban in 2011 in conjunction with the Dodd-Frank Act, and Elfman could start doing some exploration work. So we started drilling in earnest in 2014. In December 2013, Denham Capital, through their African investment arm Tremont Master Holdings, made an investment of some $10 million in order to finance the drill program. And they saw this as an opportunity to both do well financially and do good in a part of the world that desperately needed it. So they have been a key supporter of the company all the way through. We've obviously had draws in terms of being able to fund that drill program required to drill up the resource to a measured status, and also the associated design work that has to be done on the back of it, and then the CapEx. So we raised $80 million in debt from Sprott Resource Lending, and the balance has been made up in equity, primarily from Tremont Master Holdings, which is Denham Capital. We started our build in 2017, and our first task was to make the mine accessible to vehicles, which when one needs a road, you generally need heavy equipment. However, to get heavy equipment there, you need a road. So to break the circle, we unleashed the ingenuity and the extraordinary work ethic of our hosts on the problem. And they built us a 40-kilometer road through equatorial forest by hand, not 1 liter of diesel petrol used. They built bridges over the rivers. They built viaducts over areas that were too steep to be able to traverse by either doing a cutfill by hand, you're fairly limited in terms of your ability to fill big areas. So they gave us access to the project, and that allowed us to bring machines onto site, which started in middle of 2017. And we are now busy commissioning the finished project.
So after the 176 or 107, whatever the number is, but it's a large number. So now, after all that CapEx, the mine is actually expected to go into production.
Yes.
When again is do you expect to get the first tin out of there?
Well, we'll probably get our first bag of tin concentrate out at the end of this month.
Okay.
We are in changing the mining method, and there were a few other aspects. We were originally going to fly concentrate out, but there's some sensitivity on flying minerals in that part of the world. So we haven't yet received our permission to do that. And a number of factors impacted our working capital cycle. So we actually are in discussions with our lenders to give us a bit of a working capital facility. So that's the only capital outstanding. But end of this month, we will get our first bag of concentrate out. We will start revving up in April, May, June, and July. We will be at sort of under the or near to the 800 tons a month that are required for us to be at our nameplate capacity.
Okay. So that sounds very compelling. For investors, this is an interesting time to look at the story. Boris, can you tell us about your background and also some of the other key members of the team?
Sure. We have a slightly different team compared to what a normal miner of our size and area would have. In that, when we looked at it initially, we were fairly convinced that the grade would be there. And we believed that if the grade is there, technically we would be able to build this mine. It would be challenging, but we believed we'd be able to do it. What we were more concerned about was our social license to operate. This is an area that hosted two Congo wars, saw 3 million people killed. Social fabric is torn to shreds. It was difficult going. So heading up our in-country operations is a man called Dr. Richard Robinson, he actually was born in the DRC to missionary parents and has been at the interface between companies and communities for the last 16 years. And he was able to successfully navigate our way through to an agreement with our hosts in terms of how the area will be developed, how the project will go forward, and how that impacts them and the various projects that can be levered off a mine such as ours for the benefit of the local communities. So Richard Robinson heads up our team in country. Our chief operating officer is a man by the name of Trevor Farber. Now, Trevor Farber, it's probably easier to move tectonic plates than it is to move Trevor Farber. He is a force of nature and has done the most extraordinary job with his suppliers, his team on the ground, in bringing this mine to fruition. We've managed to stick largely to the budget and to the timeline. We are in the middle of a very infrastructure-constrained area, and certainly if you need a component, you can't go to the store down the road. That they've been able to build this project within the parameters we've set them, given that mines down the road from where I am sitting have run well over budget and well over time, gives you an indication of the quality of people and the quality of the team we actually have building and running Alphamin for us. My background, I'm originally a civil engineer. I've built infrastructure for a very large number of mines. I moved into finance originally as a turnaround manager. So I'd be parachuted into companies that were not doing particularly well. And then joined a team called Pangea, run by probably one of South Africa's best mining entrepreneurs, a man called Rob Still, who's had a large number of successes in the mining space. And we built and ran and sold mines from Central African Republic through DRC, Angola, Zambia, Tanzania, Mozambique, and South Africa.
And what about Boris? You mentioned some of your investors, but can you kind of tell us who some of your strategic partners and investors are, including what kind of support you have from the government?
Sure, we've got an interesting license in that it was a virgin license, and what that means is the state obviously gets a free carried interest under the old mining code, so they have a 5% interest in the company, and that interest is held by the Minister of Portfolio. In terms of other strategic investors, we have the South African Industrial Development Corporation, who are the South African government's industrial development arm. They invest in projects in South Africa and in the Southern African development area, and looking to build both industrial capacity and community benefits. Obviously, the links between the South African government and the DRC government are very strong. We also have the Denham Capital investment through Tremont Master Holdings, and that gives us access to a informed and experienced investor in the resource space, and also one that has the pockets required to be able to support a project like this. Within some of our smaller shareholders, we've got the Gerald Metals, who are the trader who will be handling the bulk of our tin. We have a number of our contractors who, when building the project, deemed it sufficiently interesting for them to invest some of their capital into the equity of the company. So quite a large number of people in the industry and of the industry involved in the mine.
Okay. Let's recap. What are the key milestones over the next 12 months that investors can look forward to?
Well, I think the first one in the very near term will be us securing a facility with our lenders to give us that working capital bridge that we need to get into production. Thereafter, it'll be an announcement on the plant having been commissioned and the first bag of concentrate being produced. Our first sales will occur in April, and then those will start ramping up through May, June, and into July. July half-year results will start showing revenue on the revenue line. I don't think at that point we will have generated enough tin to pull us into a profit-making position, but certainly by the third quarter, things should be looking on a better trajectory, and by year-end, a base set for the following year, which I am expecting to look fairly rosy.
So next year, you're saying that the company will be profitable next year from the production.
Yeah, in terms of a full year number, we're probably going to make a profit this year, but remember we only have 6 months of production to carry 1 year's of costs, so the profit will probably be a little muted. Next year we're going to have a full run at it, 12 months of production, and time to for us to bed down some of our costs and refine some that are not at the levels that we would like them to be. Our priority at the moment, obviously, is to get the wheels turning and get the plant into production. We'll then start refining our operating efficiencies and certainly our supply costs coming in.
So, Boris, final question is, in your opinion, what are the top three reasons investors should consider AlphaMin today?
I think in mining, there are two things that can never change. The first is the commodity, and the second is the grade of that commodity. Everything else can change: countries, economies, everything. And in AlphaMin, you have a very interesting commodity, one not particularly well known or watched by the market, but one that is becoming increasingly important in our modern economies and in our lives, everyday lives. It holds together the technology that we rely on. So I think that is, for me, a very compelling reason, and certainly one of the reasons that I've put the bulk of my savings into Hoffman. The second reason is that the tin space is expected to have a declining production going into an increase in demand. And in the commodity space, wherever you have that dynamic, it has an upward pressure on the price, or at the very least, keeps the price relatively firm at a reasonable base level. And the third reason is that we are bringing a mine into production that will produce very healthy returns, that will be the generator that will allow us to demarcate and develop a tin province. So not only are we expecting to have upside from our immediate financial returns, we are expecting to have incredible upside on the resources that we have under our belt.
Okay, well, on that note, Boris, I want to thank you, and we look forward to hearing more from AlphaMin in the months ahead.
Jack, thank you very much. It's been a delight talking to you.